Okay. No, I actually, I purposely chose an easy one. Sorry.
It's not easy.
I do them every day, so to me,
have you ever
okay.
played before? Have you ever done it?
Yes. Yes, I asked you.
Yeah. I haven't done them for a while, but this is the medium.
Okay, that's interesting right there, Jill.
What?
You've practiced every day.
Right.
You're calling it easy.
Yep. Exactly. It's the easiest one that's online, of the ones I do.
Okay. Well,
so they don't have a one face. They only have two faces. Okay. So why don't we go ahead and start, and we will talk about Carmel's race. This is lesson 16, and we are doing now. We had overview last week of chapter 12. Now we're going back, and we're going to do a little more in depth of just the first part of chapter 12. And then when you come back from spring break, we will do the second part of chapter 12. So what we're doing then is continuing to respond to the joy of Jesus, but seeing him as a personal trainer. And this is a very limited way to look at him, but I want us to look at that for just a minute because we're talking about being in a marathon, which really helps if you actually have some kind of trainer with you, whether it be mechanical on a, you know, an iPod or something, or an actual physical one. So we're going to look at Jesus that way so that we understand what it means to respond with endurance to our personal trainer.
Well, I just wondered if how everyone else felt about doing the lesson.
About doing the lesson?
What'd any comments on it? It just left me so defeated.
Defeated?
No questions?
Yeah.
Because?
Well,
just kind of weed that out a little bit for me, Kristen.
It did not leave me hopeful. It left me very
okay.
more like, I stink, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting.
I mean,
okay.
It was so much focus on sin that I was
okay.
just like,
okay, interesting.
Did anyone else leave it
like
that, or they were all just all good with that lesson? Maybe it was just my moment of when I finished that.
I think that's very possible.
A lot of reflection.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, bring me back, girl.
Yeah.
Left you in the fifth, that finger going.
Gosh, you must be able to leave and go shopping. I need to feel more sick.
Okay, that'll be interesting. Let's see if you still feel the same way as we go through the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
A new place,
place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely, when we talk about discipline, again, when we talked about enduring, I mean, what is the first connotation of enduring? It's like, I've got to endure. And then when we learn that enduring actually means to breathe with him, mm-hmm. to be in the moment, that's a completely different feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we do have a problem with our connotations of words, and definitely discipline is one of those words that we have a really harsh connotation on. And it isn't intended to be a harsh connotation. The problem is, whenever the connotations are harsh sometimes, and I will say Kay does this sometimes, she focuses in on that harshness.
Mm-hmm.
When I really think that there's real life out of this. And it is Christ's joy. So definitely it isn't focused on the harshness.
So you can address that with her when you're in Israel?
I have to tell you that I've been thinking about... I hope she's never seen my blog because there are obviously there are times that we definitely look at things from a different point of view. So yeah, I don't know. I certainly won't point her to my blog. Anyway, so I'm trying to decide whether I should talk about Carmel's marathon here yet or
I'm still looking at it. I haven't gotten another number.
When we look at Hebrews 12, 1 through 17, of course, we talked already about the great cloud of witnesses, so we don't need to talk about that. But it right away begins with, let us also. So when it says, let us also, what we know first and foremost is, he's saying, those people in chapter 11, they did this, so let's us do it as well. So let, and we kind of missed that little word also. It's not like now we have to do this and no one else had to, but they also did this. Let's also do it as well. Let us, it says, lay aside every encumbrance. The word there, encumbrance, actually means a weight, a burden. And so really, when we look at that, what we're saying is, in order to run this race, in order to breathe with Jesus, in order to respond to him as if he's our personal trainer, it's going to take commitment. And the commitment is, first and foremost, to let go of what you know about running. What you know. So, Carmel's a runner, and she knows a lot about running. So I asked her, take what you need for the race. What did she take? She took shorts, shoes, water bottle, shirt. Okay, so she took the things she knows about running a race, right? When she got into the dining room and she saw her race, do you know what the first thing is she did? What?
I ditched all that stuff.
Yep. She put it all out. She laid it aside. She, all of a sudden, she said, wow, this isn't the race I know.
You offered her the wrong equipment.
Take whatever you need for the race. And this is exactly what he's saying is, remember Jesus, the personal trainer? He's the one who set out the race for you. And those of you who've ever worked with a personal trainer know, you don't go in there and tell him how you want to be trained, right?
Some people do.
It doesn't go well. No. And I remember when Sherilyn first got a personal trainer, her telling him, well, I think we need to do this and this. And he's like,
I don't
know
if I'm weird
for
you guys, but
no, we're going to do this. And this is the first thing in living a life of faith that we have to understand is it takes a real commitment to let him be the trainer, not you. And to say, okay, I'll let go of what I know about the race. Carmel knows a lot about running a marathon, the kind of marathon she knows. But as soon as I gave her a different kind of marathon, she laid it aside. She knew it was none of that was going to be useful to her.
And then doesn't the fix their eyes on Jesus when you see him as a personal trainer then like also change?
Absolutely.
Like what you were talking about last week.
Right. So obviously the personal trainer doesn't sit at the very end where you can't see him and wait for you. He's right there with you the whole time, right? So when every time Carmel talks about a personal trainer, I mean, I see him like, well, didn't you say he lifts your stomach,
yeah,
he touches
yeah.
you, he's like,
push-ups
yeah.
I can't get up on one, he's like, hand under the stomach,
yeah.
that's just me,
yeah.
I can get up.
So literally he is right there with you. So he's the one, though, that's setting the course, and he's going to tell you, first of all, let go of what you know about running a race, because the race that I set out for you, you have no idea what it's going to look like. And in fact, I'm not even going to give you the plan for it, because I'm running with you, and I'm going to go step by step. And so the funny thing is, when we have such a hard time living in the moment, and we want to go ahead of them, what then is always going to happen? Fear, because we're not going to be on the course he set, because we have no idea where the course is he set. And of course, then we'll go ahead of him. And so it says, lay aside the encumbrances. The encumbrances then are everything that you bring to the race. Because it's a race he set out. You're going to bring things that you think are going to be able to transform you. And the trainer has a completely different way of doing it. He's not going to need that. He's got everything he needs to give you, and he'll give it to you when you need it. So for you to lay aside encumbrances means that I lay aside what I think are my strengths, what I know I can, oh, I can do this to help transform me. I'm a really good rule follower, so I'm going to bring that to the race because I know all he needs to do is tell me what to do, and I'll do it. Except that if I'm Carmel and I'm doing a push-up, I know how to do push-ups. And then he says, not quite. I'm going to give you a hand here. See, what I brought to the race wasn't enough. So it's laying aside. When you look at the word encumbrances, it's not sin. It's almost always things that seem good.
Can I say?
Yeah.
I had a, when I left the church, I kind of write my own like little note to the staff why I left. Mm-hmm. And this is the verse I used.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So that it wasn't an encumbrance for you. Yes.
This is the and it felt like, I felt like, but I work for a church. I should, this is a good thing. What I mean, and it was a very hard, and it was right when I was leaving the church and I was starting this study, and then the first time I was here, we were doing our boxes. I'm like, so it was just.
Yeah, so you knew. You knew that that was an encumbrance. So it's the things you bring. It's those things also that that you carry that seem good. They seem like they would be good things, but they make your life feel like a race. They feel heavy. They're the shoulds. They're the, I should be doing this. I should be whatever it might be. And all of those things will be, anytime I say should, it's going to be a good thing. I should be feeding the homeless. I should be making meals for my sick neighbor. I should be going to a Bible study. I should be. All of those things, he actually says, lay aside. They'll come back, maybe, maybe. But if you're bringing them to the race, they're not coming out of an overflow, and therefore they're not good.
Well, they're not what you're being led to do.
Right.
By Christ.
Right.
It's not what the trainer's telling you to do.
Exactly. It's what you're bringing. These are all my shoulds. These are what I bring. In fact, they're really law. So I'm bringing law to it. And he said, lay them aside. Lay them aside. The only thing I want from you is you. And a commitment to let go of whatever you bring and let me fill you up. And in that filling up, there will be some of these things that will overflow out of you. But if you bring them, they're not good. Does that make sense? It's a subtle difference. And yet I do think underneath we all know we bring things and we bring them as something we bring rather than something that overflows out of his life.
When you think of the definition like to miss the mark or something,
mm-hmm.
like is it potentially, we think of missing the mark as like not perfection? Like could it be like even just we're running a different race that wasn't determined for us?
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like we're going after even a different destination.
Right. That's actually the next verse. So that's actually where we were going to talk about that.
And Jill, can I when I think about, you know, the shoulds come up for me when I think about, you know, is it our homework, you know, you will stand before the righteous judge. And then I immediately go, oh gosh, I should start. You know, you just, mm-hmm. it just comes.
It paralyzes you.
Yeah, and that, I can understand, Christian, where you come with that. And that's a little bit misdirected. First of all, when we come before the judge, he's not going to say, you should have done this, and why didn't you? None of that will be seen. None of that. It's gone. And boy, we could talk about that forever. But what I want to understand is all of those shoulds come out of you, not out of the overflow of him. So he wants us to lay those aside. And then he said, not only lay aside the encumbrances, but lay aside the sin. When he talks about here, this is hamartia, it's to miss the mark, but it is the general sin. It is not specific sins. It's a different word, a different form of that same word. So this is the general sin. And when you look at that, what it really means is to miss the point and scope of life. So we always use the word to miss the mark. And then we connotate, oh, that means that I didn't get it right. That I didn't do this and this wasn't right. What it really means is to miss the scope and purpose of life. And the scope and purpose of life is to be reunited with God. So it's a mindset. A mindset. So any mindset that isn't about unity with God is that mindset of sin. In other words, if you're working with a personal trainer and your mindset is, instead of to have a unity, a wholeness of body, if your mindset, which I'm going to say most of our mindset is just to get skinny, then you've missed the whole point of it. And if I have a mindset of just getting skinny, thin, to look good, what will happen is I will use different means to get there, and those means almost always will be unhealthy. Because if my goal is to get skinny, then I will exercise too much, I will eat too little, I may use drugs to get there, I may do all sorts of things to get there, and I may get my goal, but I've completely missed the whole point of having a personal trainer, and that is what? Healthy. To get healthy, whole.
It's a mindset.
It's a mindset, a huge,
a lifestyle change.
Completely, completely. Hard. Right, which is exactly what he says, is lay aside this mindset, this lifestyle, that any lifestyle, any mindset that isn't about being unified with God, being reunited with Him. So any mindset that says, I should be good, I should do good things, I should do these, those are not unity with God. Do you see that? This is a big deal for us to commit to this. It's any life then lived outside of His grace. In other words, any mindset that I have that I don't have to receive everything as grace is a mindset of not being unified with Him. Because receiving grace means that's the only place I'm unified with Him, is when I'm receiving everything as a grace. Which then brings down to all ingratitude is sin. It's a mindset of not receiving grace, of not being unified with Him. And ingratitude always leads to striving then to get life for myself. So for Carmel's race, she took what she thought she needed and found out that wasn't the race she was running, that I had a different race for her, and it looks completely different, that she's still trying to figure out. Even when I've given her the grace to say, you don't have to finish that.
But I'm stuck again.
But her mindset now is to finish the race. Her mindset is, I've got to get this done. But she was also very distracted. Instead of being okay with what I gave her in the moment, how do I know she was distracted?
You mean when I was in there?
Uh-huh. How do I know she was distracted?
She was listening to us.
Exactly. Because I said, I don't want Carmel to miss too much. Right away. What did I hear? Oh, do you want me to come in?
Yeah.
See?
Ready.
Instead of being, and I'm picking on Carmel just because
she can take it.
She can take it. Yeah. She knows I love her. She knows, I mean, this is how we all are, though. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Because
sorry.
That was okay.
I was just thinking, not to mention, as an expert, I want everyone to be trained the same way I'm being trained.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Like,
and
everybody else come in here and do the same
right,
thing.
Right, right, exactly. So for, and that's why I put her in a room that she was able to hear us, but she was all alone. And she had a choice. She can be satisfied and be in the moment and actually work that. Now, I will tell you that there are a few of us in here that are introverts that would have been okay with that. We'd have been there, and we would have gone, oh, God, I get to work on this. But there would have still been a little piece of us, I like that, but I don't want to miss. I don't want to miss what everybody else is doing. Which is exactly what happens to us in our own faith life, is we don't want to miss what everyone else is doing, and we then kind of feel like we're being punished, right? That we have a different race. Mm-hmm. That our race looks so different. And that's where we begin to see discipline as a punishment. And it's not.
And Peter says, what about him?
Right. Right, exactly. Exactly.
We're constantly comparing ourselves to everybody else,
yep.
I think, to see
yep.
whether we're a little bit better.
Right, right. And in comparison, then we will always feel that discipline is punishment.
And even with weight loss, you start
start talking about how hard it is, and then you say, oh, but look at this person. She eats everything, and she's so thin and muscular, and she doesn't have to watch a thing she eats. And you kind
right,
of,
right.
But it's harder for me.
Right, exactly, exactly, yes.
That's me, get the violence out.
Right, so... So it takes a commitment to making sure that you're going to say, okay, I'm going to let go of what I'm thinking the race is like, of what my race should look like. I'm going to trust the personal trainer that he knows what's best for me. He is, and this is the one thing that I think we forget, is that as much as God looks over us as a whole people, he also looks at us individually. And he does. This is what's so cool, the fact that he's God, that he sees us individually and knows individually the training that we need. Individually. Because even if all of us here were the same height and the same weight, we still would have a different body composition and would have to be trained differently. And for us to be like, oh, but they're doing that. Why can't I do that? Why do I have to do this? Says... I don't trust. I don't trust that the trainer knows what's best for me. I always remember when Bill and I were engaged, I think it was the first, maybe the first or second Christmas that I kind of knew his parents well enough that they were giving us gifts, and they were giving us gifts as a couple. My sister-in-law and her husband needed a new TV. And so for Christmas, they got a new TV from my in-laws. And so, in order to be treated equally and fair, Bill and I got a TV. We weren't married. Bill had a TV in his own bedroom. We had no need for a TV. But we got a TV because that's what was fair. And it so rankled me to think I'm not looked on as who I am and what I need. It's just going to be fair. Fair isn't good. Fair is not what everyone needs. And so for a personal trainer to say, okay, everybody's going to do this, would not be good. It would mean that some people might benefit and most people wouldn't, because they're going to gear to one person. So we need to know that about ourselves and our mindset, because the encumbrances that we bring, the way that we think the race should be run, and the mindset that we just want to get skinny rather than we want unity, we want a wholeness, a health, those things always will entangle us. And that word entangles is a really interesting word, because it means that it's a competitor who is always making sure we don't finish the race. Those things will become things that vie for my attention, and I will not pay attention to the personal trainer. I will not pay attention to what Christ has for me that's best for me. And therefore, I'll be thwarted in every direction I go, because I'm looking and listening to everybody else's. So if all of us are in a room, we all have a personal trainer, and I'm liking the personal trainer over there that's working with someone else, I'm listening to them like, why can't I do that? Oh, I'm going to do that. And I'm completely thwarted from getting my results and my race, the place that's going to transform me. And that will distract me completely. And then I will begin to see the circumstances in my life as obstacles to joy. Because I'm looking over here and over here and over here, and not my race and what Jesus is giving me as a place of transformation. Does this make sense to you? This is something that if we don't have this set down, then it's very hard for us to go into what we talked about last week, and that is that breathing with him. So we have to make a commitment to let go. Let go of what we bring and what we think the race should look like and what we think we need for it. Let go of that. And then I can sit there with my personal trainer and I can breathe with him as he's personally training me and not everybody else. This was what we talked about last week about enduring. This is what enduring means. So we need to reinvent the connotations for the word endure and remember that it means to breathe with him, to stay there in the moment with him. Because if I'm not in the moment with him, I'm running ahead, which means I'm running too fast. I won't have breath. I won't have his presence with me. And I won't have the course he set out for me. I'll be doing my own course. And I will get lost in it. And I will not become whole in it. My course is to be skinny. Then I'm going to be trying all sorts of things my trainer doesn't want me to try. I'm going to be trying crazy diets or medications or what have you. So I'm not going to be with him, and I'm not going to be getting life. I'm not going to be getting breath. We talked about that breath, about it meaning to look to him, because he's the one who can give you breath, and he's right there with you, not at the end of the race. Probably one of the most important things for us to understand. When we think he's at the end of the race, then we will do everything we can to get there. We will do all those good things to get there. And the good things don't come out of you trying. Every time a good thing comes out of me trying, it is not a good deed. The good thing has to come out of me being filled with his presence now.
So how do you stay in right relationship with other people who will not live in the current reality?
We'll get there. We'll definitely get there. Yeah.
And how soon can you put this on the internet?
Remembering that Christ, as your personal trainer, is setting the course for you, and the course that he has for you is to be completely restored to a whole life. Knowing that, first of all, helps you stay in that. Because any course you have for yourself will not end in a whole, full life. He alone is the one that can grow your faith, because faith is dependence. And that means you got to stay right with him, right there. And he alone was the one who endured with joy, so you have a race to enter and be transformed through. So it's got to be the personal trainer, no one else. It's got to be Jesus and no one else. If you, and this is all last week review, without remaining in the moment, without remaining in Christ, right there with you, looking to him, you will grow weary from constant work, from trying to go too fast on your own. Think about it. If you decide to veer off from the personal trainer, boy, that person is doing jumping jacks. I'm going to do 400 jumping jacks, and I'm going to impress the personal trainer. What happens is you're exhausted. You come back to the personal trainer. He'll go, okay, now we're going to do push-ups. Well, you're dead. You're done. You've done all this work that didn't even help you do where you were going. In fact, most of the time, not only did it not help, but it hurt. It hindered what the personal trainer wanted to do with you. Carmel, has that ever happened to you that you actually...
Yeah, because the first time I went with the personal trainer, I did what he said, and it worked. And then I said, okay, I'm going to do this on my own, and I can eat the things I want. And it's all, at our age, it's about food. So I didn't eat as bad as I used to, but the weight came right back on.
Yeah.
So, but when I went back to him, I said, well, I'm just going to work with you. I don't want to focus on the food. And I can work out as much as I want, and my body will not change. I'm going to keep going up. Yeah.
I love it, because is that not what we say to Christ? I'll do what you want me over here, but this part's mine.
But I was the food's mine. Every
day. Yeah, I'm gonna work really hard. Yeah.
Nothing. So I'm like, that's my lesson. You know what? I do have to make a change. I mean.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, and I have to do what he says. And I brought a friend with me last week who was interested. at what you were saying, but she never worked with a personal trainer, and that's why I invited her to come to see mm-hmm. I thought she would just watch, but he said, I'll work with both of you. And he had us doing completely different things. She had a sore shoulder that she told him about, mm-hmm. and so what she did was completely different than what I did. He's like, okay, you do this, and I'm going to show her how to do this.
Yeah, exactly. So we come back to the comment in the very beginning, the comments about the weather, where people are saying, we're going to pay for this. We're getting what seems like a good gift now, but it's not really a gift. It's payment later down the road. So not only does that reveal our belief that God is transactional, but it tells us that we as a people and as individuals refuse to live in the moment, refuse to be right there with him. We're already racing ahead to what's going to happen in 2 weeks. We're going to get snow in 2 weeks. We just know it. It's going to be awful in 2 weeks. We just know it. I mean, we have this great gift, and we say, oh, I love it, but what's going to happen in 2 weeks?
It's kind of like the Jack in the Box.
It's like, we cannot stay in the moment. We refuse to that. And if we have such a hard time, this is what you said at the beginning, if we have such a hard time staying in the moment of what feels really good, how is it that we're going to be able to stay in the moment when it's really hard? This is going to be a tough thing if we can't learn to stay in the moment even when it's good. So what God does is says, hey, you are moving too fast. You've gone beyond where I am. You left me. You're racing ahead. You're not enjoying the gift I have for you now. I'm going to give you a gift that will slow you down. And so he says, I'm going to bring to you something that's hard, because it is when I bring you something hard that you will have space to slow down and breathe. And I want you to think about the hard things in your life in the last week, in the last 2 weeks, the hard things. When he brings these hard things to your life, most likely it's going to be some kind of pain, whether physical pain, emotional pain, psychological pain, whether it's within your body or within someone you love. What happens is that pain becomes the focus, doesn't it? And all the other thing falls apart. Falls by the wayside. And I'm no longer looking to run ahead, because all I can think about is what's here right now. And he says, this is a place I want you to slow down. I want you to slow down. I'm giving you a gift here. I'm giving you training for you to be able to slow down, because the goal is unity with me. Not getting somewhere else. Unity. And when we're running ahead, which we do all the time, he will give us little pains or big pains. He will use the pains that other people bring, and he will say, ah, time to slow down, time to stop, time to relax. Which is interesting, because every one of you, when I asked you what helps you relax, all of those were places and times where you actually stayed in the moment. That's what relaxed you, to stay in the moment. It wasn't planning a trip. That wasn't relaxing. It wasn't figuring out what's going to happen tomorrow, right? Everything you mentioned was being in the moment, which is exactly what he does with our training, our discipline. And it's actually what we do ourselves as parents when we discipline children. Now, we have to reconnotate that word discipline, because we have a very negative connotation of that. So if I'm going to press on, if I'm going to endure with the joy of Jesus, then I'm going to commit to letting go of what I know about the race and what the race should look like. And I'm going to let go of trying to run ahead. I'm going to breathe with him. I'm going to commit to breathe with him, stay with him. I'm also going to need to submit to whatever training he has for us. That word training, that word discipline, is actually to train a child. Right away, we're going to begin to get a little bit of a different connotation. If I'm training a child, it's not harsh. It's not punishment. It is not a transaction for something you did wrong. So discipline isn't, you've done wrong here, you're going to pay. That's not discipline. Discipline is training the spots that are weak to become strong, the places that are not in unity with God to become in union with God. They are to receive instructive correction or corrective instruction. When I'm training a child, does it, because it's corrective instruction, doesn't mean that he's done something wrong. It means I need to make sure that he's on the correct path, that he grows that. What loving parent would allow their child to grow up without constructive, without corrective instruction? What would that do to a child?
It'd be a brat. I mean, it'd be awful.
And where would life be for him? It'd be non-existent. It would be awful.
He'd probably be dead because he'd run out in front of the cars.
Exactly.
Or he'd fall in the water.
Yes, exactly right. And so the loving thing to do for a child is to give corrective instruction. Sometimes, a lot of times, the corrective instruction is going to feel painful. It's not meant to feel painful, but it will feel painful. But eventually, it will be transformed into something different. I remember, every time I think about this, I remember when my kids first started kindergarten, the instructional idea then was to change into something called whole language. Yeah, does anyone know what I'm talking about? Whole language was, they would begin to teach the kids to write whatever they wanted to write without any correction on spelling. No correction. They would continue to say, oh, what a wonderful job, and they've written all this stuff, and I can remember the stuff coming home going, what? And it really bothered me, and I thought, just because I was an English major, I don't like that. And they said, no. And they would say, parents, don't correct the spelling. We just want them to flourish in the writing. Well, guess what? They've now done research, and that generation cannot spell. They cannot spell. Rebecca, would you find that true?
Yeah,
she
but
doesn't ask me because she knows it's not true.
Yeah, it's true for me, but we don't need to spell.
And that's exactly what they say. That's exactly what they say. We don't need it. Lisa actually is a decent speller. Christian is awful. Awful.
Well, I'm an awful speller, and I wasn't taught that way.
Well,
I failed every test 3 times a week.
What I'm getting to is the fact that they wanted to commend them for all the great writing wasn't loving. Because you can't go back. It's very difficult to go back and say, oh, all that stuff I told you was good? Oh, now I'm going to tell you it's not. That's really tough.
I think it's going to keep on going, right? Because people also talk about the fact that everyone gets a trophy now, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah,
like
exactly.
Kind of
right.
Like,
right.
Just
no
showing
rejection.
Up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
You're the best.
Right. You're the best. and that is, it's interesting. If you read business articles on the business place now, really tough right now. Because you have two generations that were raised completely differently. You have a generation that feels like everything's a transaction, and you have another generation that says,
entitled.
I'm entitled because I'm good. I was told I was good all the time. So you, and then try to get the two of them working together. Tough, tough place to be working. All that to say that when Christ brings us discipline, when he uses the hard, painful places in our life, his whole purpose is, first of all, to reveal the weaknesses that we have. And the weaknesses, if we go back to the whole idea that the mindset of life is to be in union with God, then that means the weaknesses are all those places we're in disunion. All those places where that we are independent. All the places where we try to control. All the places where we are ungrateful. Those are our weak spots.
Which doesn't that mean that really all the places that were our strengths are the strongest?
Yes. Yes. So it's going to get us in those places. So my strength is words. And it is every time where I get in trouble. Every single time. Because I begin to think, my words, I'm good here. This is good. I don't need to listen. I don't need to. And Lissa can say a million times, Bill and Lissa all the time, they'll start to talk, and what happens? Right away. See, I'm not even going to give her the answer. I'm not even going to let her finish because I'm going to tell her what it is. And both Bill and Lissa, could you let me finish? Oh, sure, go ahead. But hurry up because I want to tell you what it's really like. These are places of independence for me. My strength is my weakness because I take my strength and say it's my strength. These are places I'm trying to control. And God says, okay, slow down. You are going beyond me. You're not being in the moment. You're trying, and that's true. When they're talking, and I think I already know what they're going to talk about, like I'm race ahead. I'm way ahead. And the funny thing is, where I'm ahead, that's not where they're going, but I think it is.
Or even if it is that how you want to get there, really?
Exactly. Right, I completely miss all of that. All of that.
Isn't the story of Jacob wrestling with God?
Yeah.
And when he injures his sinew, which is, I just read this, that it's the strongest muscle in your body.
Yes.
And that's where God injures Jacob.
Yeah, that's where he injures him. And forever walks with a limp, which is a beautiful picture of, see, it's the weakness that he wants from us, because the weakness means dependence. And so for us, discipline is getting rid of those weaknesses that where we're not dependent, getting rid of our independence, getting rid of our trying to control, getting rid of our ingratitude. Those places is what comes out of a hard situation, a painful situation.
And surrendering
and completely surrendering them. And this is the place where, if we're going to put it in the picture that Christ always gives us, is always incarnation, death, resurrection. This is our incarnation. This is, see? Do you see your humanness? Do you see what you're like without me? This is what you're like without me. Recognize it. Be willing in those hard places, in those places of discipline, in those places of training, be willing to recognize and say, yep, you're right. I do try to control with my words. I am not grateful for this or that. I complain. I recognize that. That's that incarnation. Recognize those places of your flesh.
It's funny, with my son this week, we're disciplining some things. It's like really hard. And he complains about everything. Every single thing he has to do. Every single thing. And so we are giving him way more things to do this week that he hates, because he wants. So anyway, he usually goes to like boot camp we've like doubled all of them, and he's like, if you don't want me to complain, you have to take away the things that make me complain. Yeah. I'm like, no, actually, I'm going to put so many things in your week this week that'll make you complain until you can surrender complaining.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's kind of like,
right?
You know, it's kind of exactly. It just reminds me of that, of like, now what is God continuing to put in my life?
Right.
What test does he keep letting me retake?
Right, you know what I mean? Right. Over and over until we surrender that, until we get to those places. So those hard, painful places, it's meant to stop you. It's meant to slow you down and say, do you recognize your independence here? Do you recognize your complaining here? Do you recognize you're always wanting control? And it doesn't slow you down, he's going to give it to you again. Because he says, you're running ahead of me. You're not breathing with me. You're not taking in life. You're on your own. and your own course, and it's not going to bring you life. And so he wants first to reveal to us, to train out of us that non-Eucharisteo life. We've been talking about that all through Hebrews, that he's trying to get us to live a Eucharisteo life, a life that sees everything as a gift, that is thankful and has joy. And so he has to train out of us all those places that are non-Eucharisteo. We have to recognize them. And so he has to bring us pains, hardships, and discipline. But this is training for us. If, Carmel, your trainer never said to you, well, this, you have weak stomach muscles. If he never worked on them, what good would all the rest be, right? Oh, I've got great arm muscles and I've got great leg muscles, but my stomach is, you know, coming beyond my waistband. It wouldn't do you any good. And so he does bring this as a loving thing to us. Then he will strengthen those weak places so that they become places of communion rather than disunion, places of communion, union with him, places where I am dependent, that I receive the death of my control, the death of my complaining, the death of my independence. Yes, I want those to die. So I don't just recognize that those are a piece of me. I say yes, I want those to die. I want those to get out of my life. I don't want those to be a part of my life. I'm glad to be slowed down. And this is where we begin to see that discipline, all of a sudden we realize, oh, he's actually transforming me here, in this place. I can be in this moment and be okay with it. Because here he's transforming me. He's giving me the opportunity not only to recognize it, but to say, let's kill it. Let's let that independence die. And I can receive then resurrection. I can receive union with him. And what happens is that I begin to see that my unity with him is restored. When I name it as discipline, as training, when this hard pain, and I say, oh, this is training. This is Jesus training me. Then I recognize it as him, the Father, training the child. I recognize then that I am a child that is unconditionally loved. This is the place where C.S. Lewis talks about this surprised by joy. Wow, in this hard place, I recognize he's training me. I recognize I'm unconditionally loved and he is training me as his child. This is a place where all of a sudden you are able to lean back into the truth of you being the unconditionally loved child, the truth of you being an inheritor, that you're beginning to inherit and receive his wholeness. And the truth that not when you are receiving that, you have this peace. And this is what Philippians talks about, that peace that passes understanding, that in the midst of the discipline, in the midst of the hardship, I have peace because I have begun to see that it's training by the Father to the child that he loves, that he's giving me himself, the inheritance of his wholeness. And I can lean into that. I didn't have to create peace here. I didn't have to say, this is a hard place. I just got to be at peace. I just got to be at peace. It's letting him show you, oh, this is a place that I'm not in union with you. Yeah, I don't want that. I want that to die. Oh, I recognize this as training me, allowing me to be his child, receiving his wholeness. And I can be at peace in the moment. Does that make sense to you?
Well, when Noah said, why are you punishing me so much? I said, this isn't punishment, this is practice.
Yes, yes, like exactly. Yes, this is practice. And it's practice because I love you, because I'm transforming you. This is where you're transformed. This is the space I'm giving you so that you can recognize it's me. Now, we have a choice there, though. It is whether I submit to it or fight it. I can fight it. I can see this hard thing not as a gift, and I can say, I don't like this hard thing. I'm not going to recognize it as something weak in me, as something, a place where I'm not in union with you. I'm going to fight it. And he gives us the choice. I mean, when Carmel said to the trainer, okay, fine, you can train me, and I'm not going to do any of the food stuff. What does he say?
He said, okay.
Okay.
It's not going to work. But
right, it's not going to work, but
your
okay.
Choice.
Your choice. Your choice. But I'll give you another chance. I'll invite you again. And again, and again, because this is what's good for you. This is what will give you life. So we do have a choice here whether we submit to receiving corrective instruction. And in time, when we receive the dependence that we're getting out of that, in time, it will transform my feelings of heaviness, my feelings that this was an awful thing, into joy. And I can tell you that through my own experience, that the hardest things that I went through, that the hardest things I go through, are joy, and I wouldn't give them up. I don't want to go through them again, but I wouldn't give them up for what they have produced in me, for the closer relationship I have with Christ because of them. And I now see them as joy. I can still remember the heaviness and that feeling, but I now see him with me and him transforming me in those places.
Which is interesting, because when you say you can remember the heaviness, I think it makes you relate to future heaviness in a different way.
Yes.
It's not so. It's not. It's heavy, but it's not. It's a different heavy.
Right, right.
You can relate to other people's heaviness.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it, more calm, I feel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you're able to have then. You know that you can experience peace in the midst of hardship. You know you can because you've done it, you've seen it. And you know that although the heaviness is there, and it is not to say it doesn't hurt, because it does. We have a whole book in the Bible about how much pain hurts. That's fine. But to know that he's using that to transform, to be able to be in that place, enables us then to go into the next place, and that is to be able to share that with others in completely different ways than I think we normally think. It's not to go and say, hey, just be peaceful. It's actually for you to be peaceful for them and with them.
Which is interesting, you know, I mean, having heard this little news about the grandbaby, it was, I mean, you embrace it, and yet it's within time. You know, like for me, it was like within a half hour that God provided a story.
Yep.
Of someone who, my own niece, whose third child has one kidney. And then the specialist at the clinic, who's 50 years old, shares with them that he only has one kidney. And it's not as uncommon as we think. And then, so it was just that little wee of God. There's peace.
Yep,
there.
Absolutely.
Okay. So recognizing that and being okay with it all, it's like, we don't know, and yet
right.
We have to be peaceful with the whole process of what God's doing.
Right, exactly. And that is part of the joy of being in the moment, is being able then to see him bring into you all of these confirmations of, I'm working you. And I've worked other people in different ways, but in similar ways so that you can see, I am working in all of these places. But it also is going to require not only just a commitment to receiving the corrective instruction, but a commitment to receive the responsibility to participate in the training. So I could stand back and watch that personal trainer tell me everything to do. Okay, this is what I want you to do here. This is what I want you to do here. And I can watch, and it's not going to do me any good. Right? I can hear lots of instruction. But if I don't participate in it, it's never going to do me any good. I have to make that commitment to participate in it as well. I need to exercise those weak spots. He's given me a hard situation, and he says, Jill, your words, you're not depending on me. You're not living in the moment. You're not standing back. You're trying to control things with your words. I want you to exercise that. I want you to exercise dependence on me. I want you to exercise not controlling. Try those things. Try them. So he says, hopefully you can follow as I'm going along here. I don't usually go through the verses. When he talks about, therefore, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble. What this means is lift your hands up, get your knees moving, move with it. Start using what I've given you. And then he says, and make straight paths for your feet. The word there, straight, is actually ortho. So like orthotics. Use the orthotics I'm giving you. I'm giving you this hard situation to make your path straight, to transform you. Use it. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever used orthotics in your shoes. There are several kinds of orthotics, but the first time I had to use them, I was given really hard orthotics. And they said, only 1 hour a day. 1 hour a day, build up. Over a couple weeks, build up. What do you think I did? You know, I can go longer than 1 hour a day. Come on, I'll go 3 hours to begin with. I had to throw them away, and they were expensive. I just couldn't do it. My feet were in such pain. So I didn't listen. I'm going to go ahead of you. I'm going to do more. Use the orthotics. Use the hard circumstances I'm giving you now. Be in that moment now. Don't go beyond that. What does it say? We have enough to deal with today. Don't go to tomorrow. Deal with today. I'm giving you some orthotics to walk in. Yes, they are going to feel a little uncomfortable. They may be a little painful. They may be a lot painful. Use those. Use those hard places. Use those discipline places, those training places, and walk in those places. So that the places of your independence will become dependence. So that your crooked walking, your walking over to a race of your own, becomes you walking into the race I've set out for you. So that if you continue to walk outside of where I've given you, you're going to become crippled. And it will be very difficult for you to walk straight. I'm giving you things that will heal you. And so I was prescribed orthotics because of plantar fasciitis, which lots of you have. And if I didn't do something about it, it was going to always be a problem. But if I continued in this, if I always wore these, I could be healed. And I haven't had problems with it until, like, the seasons change. And I decide, oh, I can wear these shoes. And I'll just wear...
sandals.
Yeah, sandals. Yeah, right, you know, exactly. And 2 days it takes. And I'm like, oh, man. The purpose of his orthotics is for you to be healed. It's interesting that he says all of this. Make a commitment to let go of what you bring, what you think the race should look like. Make a commitment to breathe with me, to stay in the moment with me. Then be submissive to the training I give you. Be submissive by receiving it as corrective instruction from a father to a son, from the rich king to give to you, to be an inheritor, to one who actually can give you a place of peace so that you can actually grow peace for others. In doing that, he says, then he talks about peace with other men. I cannot, we'll talk about the word pursue, but I cannot pursue peace with other men if I've never done the letting go of my own stuff, the breathing with him, being in the moment with him, and submitting to the discipline. Because I will never have his peace, that leaning into that peace, what he gives me as he's transforming me to be able to give to others. It will be a manufactured peace that will force other people. You just got to be at peace. You just got to rest here. You just got to rest. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not peace or rest. If I'm shaking you saying, be at peace, rest, what's he knowing? You don't have any rest. You don't have any peace. And so he goes all the way from that to then now pursue peace. Now, I'm sad that they use the word pursue here because it doesn't mean anything like pursue at all. The word pursue here actually means to lean into, to lean into peace. In other words, you don't create the peace. You have learned by submitting to discipline how to be in God's presence and breathe in the moment. Lean into what you've already learned. Lean into it just a little with all men. And what happens here is as you lean into this undisturbed feeling of well-being, I'm okay. I've learned, and this is what Paul says, I've learned to be okay in hard circumstances. And when someone else is in a hard circumstance, and this talks to what you talked about, when someone else is racing down somewhere other and not staying in the moment, you can lean into peace. And what that does is gives them an invitation. I'm going to lean into peace. You can do that. Here's an invitation. I'm not going to get all anxious with you because you've become anxious. I'm going to lean into peace for you. I'm going to lean into it for you as an invitation. And if you decide you're not going to do that, I'm still going to do it. So that it is always there as an invitation to you. So that when you encounter someone in a hard circumstance and they get all frazzled and they start running their own race and all over the place, and for you to say, I'm just going to lean into peace. I can be okay in this hard situation. How many of you have been in a hard situation where the best thing someone did for you is just be there in calmness? Mm-hmm. You've experienced that? Yeah. That's what he says we can do. And we can only do it when we've done it in submission to discipline and been able to be there on our own. And then we can do it for others. And that gives them this invitation. There's another way to actually be in the discipline. You don't have to run away from it. And I'm just going to be there for you. I'm going to lean into peace for you.
And bringing into that is just...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Remember the clip I showed a long time ago about the little boy who was just frantic with stuff, and his dad, it's okay, it's okay. And what happens when he sees the dad breathing rhythmically, nice, he's able to run into that breathing and take his breathing, and it becomes his. That's what God says, because you've done that, you're able to do that for others.
Sort of happened to me yesterday. I had an energy audit of my house. Mm-hmm. Came free from the city. And as the guy was doing it, he wanted to see the plans of the house to draw it all out and everything. And we were just commenting about how unique and beautiful and that Chuck did it. And I started crying. And he knew Chuck. I mean, everybody in the building knew Chuck. And he says he's a legend in the city. So I'm crying, and he just talked to me. I don't even know who this guy is. And he said, no, he says, I know, I appreciate you. You're a special man he was. And I just, it was what I needed, I
yeah.
guess. I
mean, yeah.
It just helped. And
yeah.
He let me do that. He put some tears on his shirt.
And he was in the moment with you. And therefore, that was okay. I can be here in the moment with you.
Right.
He didn't, like I often do, because that always brings me into tension. Let's just deflect and let's just go on from here. I just want to get on from there. When it is being in the moment. So I can do that for others. I can be in the moment for you. And then it helps you come in the moment. It's an invitation to be in the moment. It doesn't help for someone to be all harried and afraid and anxious for you to go, okay, let's sit down and plan this. Because what you just did is says, yeah, we need to go into the future. We need to live somewhere else beside here. What helps is, okay, let's be here. And that gives you a beautiful invitation to someone else. It doesn't mean they're always going to accept it. It doesn't mean that they're always going to want it. But you continuing to be in it always gives them a place to go back to say, oh wait, there is another way to do this, to be in the moment. And so he says, so when you look at the word pursue, it is not this race, this I got to go after it. It's a leaning into peace. It's a being in the moment of where his breath is there. But it says not only pursue peace with all men, but sanctification. So that when I pursue, when I lean into sanctification, this there here is not talking about the process of sanctification. This is the done deal of sanctification. This is the state of sanctification. In other words, I'm a saint. I am holy. And when I'm able to lean into that, how God sees me, I'm holy. I'm a saint. I'm okay. I'm completely loved. I don't have the need to make anything happen. I don't have the need for the other person to like me or to feel like I'm doing good. I don't have any needs when I lean into the fact that God loves me and sees me as complete. And that is, again, an invitation to them. Here, there's an invitation. Do you want to be in the place where you absolutely know that you are complete in God? I don't need to impress anyone. I don't need to do anything for anyone. This, coupled with leaning into peace, is a place and a space where people can stay in the moment rather than try to get out of the moment and miss what God has for them and for you as well. So he tells us these two things, and then probably for me, one of the very favorite verses in Scripture is it says, see to it, and this is you. You see to it, not God. You see to it that no one comes short of God's grace. In other words, you see to it that no one lacks experience of God's grace. You make sure to not withhold grace to anyone. Make sure that they have an experience of grace. Everyone you come into contact with, make sure that they experience undeserved favor where you expect nothing in return.
It's very parallel to the leveling, right?
Yeah.
Because in some ways, they're saying people can't really be healed if you keep putting obstacles
exactly
in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So it's kind of like that parallel.
Right. Right. And so, because we are being healed and we have experienced God's grace and we have become the priests in the face of God, he says, your responsibility here is to make sure everyone else gets an experience of grace, gets an experience of unconditional love, that they be able to find out that there is another way to live so that they have an alternative to whatever bitterness is in them that it doesn't grow. In other words, when it talks about a root of bitterness springing up, it means that there is in you, in all of us, this poison, this not union with God, that if it never encounters unconditional love, if it never encounters grace, it will grow above ground. That's literally what the word means. It will grow above ground, and it will begin to grow and flourish, this poison. It is only grace, unconditional love, that gives anyone an opportunity to see that there's another kind of life. And it's the only thing that actually will cause them to change their mind about there being another kind of life, another way of life. So that we have the responsibility to never withhold grace from anyone, so that they have the experience, so that that bitterness does not grow, that that poison does not grow, that they have an experience of another way of living. Otherwise, they only know transactional living. They only will live by sight. And he brings up Esau, who, he says, was an immoral and godless person. Immoral, this actual word means male prostitute. It means selling yourself to get life in any way. In any way, which we all do, but remember the story of Esau. And I had to go back to it to look and see. With Esau, not his brother, not his mother, and really not his father, ever, from what we can read, gave him, at that point when he comes in hungry, and he says, I'm hungry, if Jacob had been, Jacob was not in union with God at that time, if he had been in any kind of union with God, what would have been the response? Let me get you some food. Let me give you grace. Let me give you unconditional love. I don't care if you deserve it or not. I'm going to give it to you. Does Jacob give him grace? No. Does Rebecca give him grace? No. Even his father later on doesn't give him grace. No one gives Esau the chance to stop the growth of the bitterness. And Esau there is left with no other option because he doesn't know there's another way. He only sees, oh, everything's a transaction. Jacob just told me it's a transaction. And so his response is very understandable when he says, well, I'm going to kill Jacob. That's all he's seen. Do you see the responsibility, how heavy that is in some ways, and yet what a privilege it is that we have the power to be able to give somebody grace and stop bitterness from growing, stop transactional living, give them an invitation, hey, there's another way to live. This is a huge piece for us that we have that power and responsibility to do.
You know, I look alongside with some of the root words, you mm-hmm. know, and the word for immoral there is like the same as porno.
Yep, it's porno.
Which makes me think of this like real and practice, you know, transactional, like the real picture of it. You know, just like in some ways, like our, what is pornographic in some ways is like the transaction, right? That yes. You're like wanting something
yep.
without having to deal with the real thing.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Without kind of just making the life for yourself, and how in some ways immorality, we think of it as like what's evil is like that picture, but what's really evil is us trying to like get something
yes.
for ourselves in a fake way, like
right.
in a transactional
yep.
way, you know?
Yep.
So like what does that mean for me? Like immorality, like what are the ways I'm trying to get the not real,
yep.
you know, instead of having to deal with the real. I don't know.
Right, right. And of course that plays into all that running ahead of him, trying to get, I want to try to get skinny. That's not the real. The real is wholeness and health. I just want to get skinny.
And are we willing to call that immorality?
Right.
Do you know what
right.
I mean?
Right. What if we didn't just call it immorality? What if we called it pornography?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is what it is.
Right.
Then would we have a different...
The
see,
unreal image.
Yeah, it's the unreal image. It's you trying to satisfy yourself with something that's fake, that's not real, that's ugly.
Yeah.
And it happens. And yet we, as someone who's actually experienced some of that wholeness, we have this power to offer them something else, mm-hmm. right in the midst of that. Oh, there's the real here. There's the real here. You want it? It's here. I'll give it to you. Mm-hmm. And so many times we don't give that. Well, they're ugly. They're not being peaceful. They're trying to run their own race. I'm going to stay away from them. I'm not going to give them. When the whole call for us is, give them grace. Give them the real.
You know why? I mean, with the training thing, it's almost harder to retrain someone who has bad form and thinks they've got it figured out.
Yes, it is.
Than someone who's like totally open to learning and is like, oh, just teach me what the real...
Right.
Thing is, you know, I think that's why right. it's like you like see someone who's like doing it with different form and you're like, I almost don't even want to.
I know.
You know.
Because you know that you're going to offer it and they're going to reject it several times.
Right.
And so remember we always said this, when you do that, it's always going to cost you something. It's going to cost you rejection a couple times. Mm-hmm. Maybe for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the experience of really learning rejecting the truth and then living in your own truth.
Yes.
And now you know that is the truth.
Right.
And
right.
It's like that whole change
yeah.
happens. But like you said, it'll be rejected.
Right. Right. It will be rejected. Yeah. It will be. So he calls Esau not only immoral, but godless. The word there is actually profane. And profane means to live outside of God's presence. Well, God's presence wasn't offered to him within his family function. He didn't know there was any other place to live. And this is where it becomes, I think, this is the harder place than the discipline is. I think the discipline and the training, although it's painful, you understand that a little bit more. This place of not of offering to people God's presence, offering to people God's grace, is the harder place. And not just letting them think that there isn't a place and a space where there's a way of getting a new life. If I allow people to live in places where they don't think there really is a good God that loves them, that there's an understanding grace, if I always are giving them, oh, there's a God and he expects this from you, I have just done exactly what Jacob did to Esau. It's a transaction. You got to be good. You got to do this for this. I tell them then there really isn't a place like that. That will then those people will have no choice but to live transactionally. And living transactionally will always defile others. Always. Because, and we've talked about this over and over again, when I live transactionally, I always look at you then as a tool and not a person. We talked about this yesterday when Lisa came home from work. She said, it's amazing how people treat you when you're behind the counter. Because they don't see you as another person having a lot to do. They see you as a tool. I'm paying you. You better do what I want.
So, you know, it's interesting because whenever we shared our embarrassing stories, and I especially remember your story about your son taking the drink and dumping it, we were all going, oh, and I thought, I've been that man. I've been that man, not upset with your son or that specific situation, but I've been the one upset. Or what if I had been in the picture that someone was painting? Of course, we were all listening from our perspective.
Right.
But if I had been the nurse who had been in the room whenever, you know, I was embarrassed, if I had been the nurse, what would my response have been? And that was a very humbling realization to realize I've been the other person as well.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So your most recent point was
transactional.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
And how? Yeah. I can't remember how that tied to what you were just saying.
Well, I mean, that's why people don't get healed, right? I mean, we're tripping them up, literally. We're tripping them up because we go transformation, transaction, transaction, transaction.
Right.
And the ground on our race isn't level.
Right.
And they're like, how do I walk this road? You're going transaction, then you're going transformation. You know what I mean?
And the only way to ever really give grace is to recognize that you were once in the receiving end.
Oh, or
have and are always in the receiving end.
That was it. You were saying she came home from work.
Right.
And you know,
right.
For all the times that we could say, oh, there was a positive interaction, or you know, I gave grace or I received grace. You say I didn't receive grace or I didn't give it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, isn't that Jacob, back to that same story, when he wrestles with God and then he actually goes to confront Esau, doesn't he say, I see God in your face?
Yes. And in fact, this is the cool the story about about Esau is, at some point, although his family didn't give him grace, his family didn't show unconditional love, at some point, God made sure that he actually received unconditional love and grace, because it's not Jacob who actually is the first one to say, I'm sorry, you know, this is not how things should have been. It's Esau who says, brother, I'm good. You do not have to pay me for anything. I am great. I have been blessed greatly. And we see that somewhere else down the line, God has given Esau an experience of grace so that he then is able to give grace. And it's Jacob. It took Jacob all the way till the night before he meets Esau to say, oh, God is in this place and I didn't know it. I didn't recognize it. I didn't receive it. I didn't receive any of this as grace. He goes through all those years. And it's Esau who's being transformed in the midst of that before Jacob ever is. So it's interesting to watch that God has many, many places for grace to show up. But it's also interesting to know that he also says, you could be that place. You could be that place of grace that gives somebody life and what's real.
Well, and Jill, don't you think too, I mean, it's so interesting with Melissa's example of the being a clerk in a store, and don't you find with yourself that it's like, I can give grace when it's like I'm in the moment.
Yep.
And I'm just
yep.
But boy, when I have somewhere to be,
yep.
And someone's not moving, it's like
that's
my
exact,
grace goes right out the window.
That's
and
right.
I'm like, get to my next thing.
Right, exactly, exactly. So it's interesting that being in the moment seems like, oh, this, you know, that's a nice idea. It really makes a difference as how we relate to others and give grace and receive grace. It makes a huge, huge difference. And it is why then we look then at all kinds of discipline, little disciplines, big disciplines. It can be as little as someone being upset because you said something or didn't say something. It stops you. It's supposed to stop you to go, whoo, wait. Be in the moment. Be here. Here's where his breath is. Here's where his presence is. I can lean into peace here. Not, this is what we say. Oh, I can lean into peace as soon as I get over there. As soon as I get all my errands done. As soon as everybody's happy. And he says, no, I actually am giving you that ability now. That idea that Eden is being restored now. And you don't want it? Well, it's always going to be here now. You can run as fast as you want. But eventually you're going to have to come back to now. Right here, right now. So it is when I'm allowing myself to commit myself to letting go, to breathing with him, being in the moment, to submitting to his training, to receiving that responsibility to actually participate in that training, and then to practice demonstrating giving grace, it is then when all of a sudden I realize my race has actually turned into joy. When I allow him to slow me down and to train me, it restores unity with him. And I actually experience joy. Not dependent on circumstances. Plain, simple joy because I am beginning to feel what it's like to be whole in union with him. Not that everything outside of me is going good, but that union is happening with him, that communion with him. Anybody have any questions or thoughts about what he's talking about here in being with him as a trainer? Kristen, let me ask you this. How does that look any different than how you were seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's so much more hopeful. I don't feel like, I felt hopeless. I did.
Yeah.
I was like, well, this is where I am. This is where my eyes are focused, and this is what I want, and I want my own way. You know, I felt so, hopeless.
Yeah.
At that point, instead of being hopeful, not. I mean, and I kept saying, he trains for your good. I mean, to myself, I was saying it in different words.
Yeah.
But thinking of him as a trainer, I love fitness. I've always loved that kind of lifestyle. So to me, it's easier to be like, he's good.
And, yeah. Yeah.
More of an invitation to.
Yeah, definitely an invitation. And definitely as a father to a child, we know as parents, it is never our intention to make our children feel hopeless, right? We absolutely don't want them to feel hopeless, but we do want to train out of them any of the non-Eucharisteo kind of a life. I want that trained out of me. And although I don't always like it when I'm getting trained, more and more I can sit in that and go, I'm being trained. This is good. That heaviness that I have doesn't necessarily have to be there. I can actually have a place to lean into And that's his piece, not mine.
Well, and it really does make a difference. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, I've been trying to live in the moment more. My husband being home on time for dinner is like my biggest thing, you know, because it's hard to get it ready, you know, and I have my kids, and he's always home at 6 o'clock or a little bit before. And if he's not, if he's like running late, he just has to call. And last week I was, in the moment I was in a good place, and he didn't call, it was 6, and I was like, okay, it's okay, we're just going to eat without Dad, you know. And then he called at like 6:05, and he's like, I just left the office. And I think he was ready for me to like lay into him, like, well, you know, you, because that was my biggest thing. And I said, that's okay. And he was totally, he's like, okay. Like, yeah, he's like, I didn't see the time. And yeah, he did. And it just made him more joyful, peaceful, easy. When he got home, he was so thankful. You know, I know I sound like a witch of a wife right now.
But it's so true.
It does make a huge difference.
It's
like,
so true.
Why do we not do that all the time? Why do we not choose to live in that all the time?
Yep.
That's
right. Exactly. Because we're so used to it, and that's our habit, that's our rut.
I'm
slaving,
making this beautiful day.
Right, right. Right, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I did my part, you got to do your part.
Yeah.
Right. Exchange.
Yeah.
So, what if we are trying, warts and all, to lean in, to live in God's rhythm? And experience his peace. And yet someone that we really want to have a relationship with basically is saying, no, relationship with me is over here. Because this is how, maybe not a non-believer, but someone is saying, I'm sorry, the reality that I live in is this one.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we then reconcile that relationship to be a meaningful one?
I'm going through that right now. There's someone who I'm in a relationship with, and I know they keep tally. I know it's fully transactional. I know that they're kind of frustrated with me right now because I'm not playing the game right. I'm not, like, she did something for me. I did not do something back yet. She invited me over yet. I have not invited her over yet. You know what I mean? Like, I know there's this whole transaction thing going on, and I keep saying to God, it could be so much easier if I just invited them over, give her a gift, and then it's over. It's over. It's over. You know what I mean? Then we'll be fine, and I can move on. And I keep feeling for the Lord, like, and that would be sin, because that would be transaction. And I want you to wait for me to tell you to invite them over. I want you to be joyful. I want you to be cheerful. I want you to actually want to have them over. I wanted my presence to be there.
Yep.
I wanted to lead the whole thing. You have to wait until I put it on your heart to invite that person. And I feel like to them it's going to be like, it may do something to our relationship. I don't know. That's what I'm going
through. And maybe this needs to be a sidebar conversation because it's rather specific, but I've been doing that for like 4 months, and now there's this reality that's coming to me is, okay, now I was fine with that. At some point, we need to transition into relationship again, and I don't know how to do it. And I'm not worried about it or anything, but I don't understand.
Which is where the problem is coming, right?
Which is where it's like, when it's family, there's this should.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know who you're talking to. This is the situation I've had with my father for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. I did that and said, I want relationship, but I'm going to lean into peace here, and I can't come over into your reality because your reality isn't true or good or healthy. But I will always be open to relationship. And it hasn't happened yet. 3 years, and it's my father. And those are those hard circumstances, those places. I will only get life if I can lean into this and be okay in the moment here. And scripture does say, as long as it's, as far as it's up to you, I have done my part. Relationship, sometimes we do put relationship of men and women up beyond what God wants for us. Mm-hmm. And we say, we got to have relationship because it's family.
Mm-hmm. At any cost.
At any cost. And Christ says, no, actually, your goal is to be in union with me. And you can be an invitation to them. You should not be a block for them. You can be an invitation by leaning into peace here, being okay with this, and continuing to say, it's open, but I'm not going to pay what you want me to pay for it. I'm not going to be transactional in this. It's the words I used with my dad. I'm not going to do what you want me to do in order to have relationship with you, but I want relationship with you, and I will be who God's trying to make me to be. It's up to you, and I'll continue to be that way. I'll continue to put the invitation out. But it doesn't mean we change. Does that mean it's going to, does that mean that it has to, does there have to be relationship there? There has to be invitation, but there doesn't have to be relationship. That's something I don't think we feel is okay, right? Yeah. It feels really awful that I have no relationship with my father. And it feels awful that he doesn't want it, except if it's a transaction. Feels pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. So do you keep extending the invitation?
Yep, I do.
See, I've given up with my dad.
And, you know, there are certainly lots of temptations to give up. And my other sister has given up.
Sometimes the people just go off and leave you and you can't.
Yeah.
You can't do anything. But I think the key is extending invitation and you feel led. Because you can even get into this place where you're like, I should. Invite them every single holiday.
Right.
I should.
Right.
You know what I mean? Instead of like, you know, I would really like them to be here. And I'm going to extend the invitation. They'll probably say no, but I'm just going to extend it. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's important too.
Yeah. And to continue to give grace, not going, well, you haven't done, for 3 years you haven't done it. Forget that. That's done. Here, what's the moment today? Yeah. Certainly not an easy place to be, and not a place that we often think we'll be. But just one of many places that God still uses, continuing from my own training and from my dad's. I hope. So let me finish this off, and then we can, if there's any more questions. Father, I thank you for this day and the beauty of it, the beauty of these women, the beauty of women who really want to be in union with you. I thank you for the energy of your Holy Spirit within each of these women and the joy it is to be able to be in the moment with you and to breathe with you. Ah, I breathe with you in joy. Amen.